Should Florida school children learn sex ed with less emphasis on abstinence? One Jacksonville lawmaker says yes. Good morning. Live from Studio 5, it's First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Jessica Palumbo in for Melissa Ross, who's filling in for Diane Rehm in Washington. First Coast Connect is always live at 9, and now you can subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Just ahead, Representative Reggie Fullwood is here to tell us why he wants to overhaul the way kids learn about reproduction. Join the conversation with your thoughts and questions about sex ed at 549-2937. Also this morning, an exhibit at the Ritz Theater and Museum is bringing to life the story of African Americans who overcame discrimination to become pioneers of flight. Plus, The Spectator is here with all the best happenings for your weekend. All of that is ahead this hour. But first, Florida law requires schools to teach that abstinence until marriage is the expected standard. Not only marriage, but specifically a monogamous, heterosexual marriage. Jacksonville State Representative Reggie Fullwood wants to throw out that law and start over with what he's calling the Florida Healthy Adolescent Act. Representative Reggie Fullwood is here. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
To our listeners, what do you think? Are you a parent or someone who teaches sex ed, maybe? What do you think about the way it's taught in public schools? Call us now at 549-2937 with your comments. You can also comment on our Facebook page or send us an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct. Representative Fullwood, what do you think is wrong with the way schools are teaching sex ed now?
Well, I think the challenge right now is just not realistic. And let me just say this, I'm a father with three kids, and ideally I want to tell my kids, look, wait till you get married. It's the right thing to do, certainly. But the reality of the world is that that's not the case. And more realistic, Duval County leads the state in cases of teens with STDs. Florida is at the top in the nation of new, back in 2014, Florida led the nation in new HIV cases of people under the age of 25. So again, the reality is that there are young people that are having sex, and we need to better educate them. And studies have shown that a more educated public, more educated group of teens typically do not, you see teenage pregnancy go down, and you see a lesser rate of sexually transmitted diseases. So this is an effort to say, look, we're not saying that abstinence isn't great. It's great. It's just not realistic to say that, you know, that's the only policy. We need to better educate our kids.
So are you saying that it's just not working because maybe parents shouldn't be in charge of that? We should make sure that the schools are getting out the information that the kids need.
No, I don't think, I mean, ideally, I think parents should be in charge of educating our kids as it relates to sex education. Mm-hmm. However, this bill doesn't mandate anything. It's an option. It says that school districts, even principals on the school level, have the ability to put together a curriculum to educate a group of students who would like to be educated. So it's not a mandate at all. Kids don't have to take the class. This just provides an option for more comprehensive sex education.
And looking at the bill itself, I noticed that it says schools can teach all methods of birth control as part of that curriculum.
Certainly. Well, and again, it's the education to say that, look, there are several types of birth control, and more importantly than the birth control part is the diseases, the sexually transmitted diseases, because that is, again, when I took office in 2010, Duval County was heads over any other county as the rate of sexually transmitted diseases amongst teenagers. So it's really an effort to say, look, kids, we don't want you to have sex, but if you are, these are the methods of protection you need to use to protect yourself and your life, essentially.
And I noticed also that abstinence is still mentioned in the policy as an option, but it says it should not be taught as the only option.
Exactly.
All right. We have some callers on the line already. On hold. Caller?
Yes, hello?
Yes, you are on the air with Representative Reggie Fullwood. What is your comment or question?
Well, my comment is actually a supportive comment to what he was actually saying earlier about people going ahead and
getting infected at certain ages, you know, at the rate going up. I am a 20-year survivor of HIV. I contracted it when I was 25. I had to fight tooth and nail with my parents to try to go ahead and get some kind of sexual education, never mind, you know, being openly gay and having that be an okay type of thing. And I think the conversation being so awkward for so many people on so many different levels, if there was a mature, comprehensive, and factual representation of what things, you know, what things were being discussed and how they were being discussed, rather than these kinds of sensationalistic types of altruistic ways of going about it, you know, we'd be able to control these infection rates. We'd be able to have fewer teen pregnancies, and people would have a better understanding of their bodies and themselves. I mean, after all, we're born naked. So this kind of shaming that goes on in this society with Europe doesn't handle it that way, but we do. Like there's a shame with the way that God made you, you know, and that's just ridiculous to me. So, but that's my comment, and I applaud him for his effort.
Thank you for your comment. Representative Fullwood, do you agree that shame is part of what the education is that kids are getting now?
Well, I don't know if shame is the right word, but I will say this. There are parents who, for those who say, oh, parents should be the ones who educate their, well, there are parents who don't know. They don't know, you know, how the rates of infection, and they haven't educated themselves. So, again, this is hopefully a tool in the toolbox that can be used for school districts and schools. And I agree with the caller was saying. Oftentimes, you know, it's a touchy subject to talk about. And here, we're a little bit more conservative than they are in Europe on how we deal with sex. I think now's the time, and we're in it's 2015. We're going into 2016. We should be able to have adult comprehensive sex education conversations with our teenagers.
Our Facebook page is blowing up right now with comments on this topic. Just a small sampling of those comments for you. Frida says, the Jacksonville school system is better at teaching sexual education truths than a few years ago, but could always be better. Our students deserve reality and facts in order to make decisions in their lives. Do you agree, Representative Fullwood, that we're getting better at sex ed?
I think so. I mean, it's certainly not the sex ed I got when I was in high school or middle school. I don't quite remember. But, I think it's gotten a little bit better. But we have to do a better job. I know one of the stats is Florida ranks fourth in the nation in syphilis outbreaks. And a lot of this is happening in our young adults. So the caller said that he's a 20-year survivor of HIV. There was a study that came out in 2014 that says 16% of all new HIV infections were among people under the age of 25.
Another comment on our Facebook page from Rod, a more critical comment, perhaps. It says, what exactly is he proposing to replace abstinence-focused education? Is the new premise going to be that sex has no consequence as long as one doesn't become pregnant or contract an STD? Is it going to be that you can engage in sex with innumerable partners and still lead a healthy marriage life once your days of experimentation are over? What's your response to that?
I laugh a little bit. Of course not. That's not the case at all. Again, you lead. I think the lead off for any sex education should be, hey, you shouldn't have sex until you're ready or until you're married. Okay, great. That doesn't work for most of us. So if you are going to participate and have sex, there are consequences or there are things that are real that could happen. That affect your health, affect your well-being, that could affect your future. So you need to understand that. So I think it's to better educate. So it's almost the opposite of what the Facebook respondent is saying. It's the total opposite. We're trying to better educate kids, especially young people, on the ramifications of having sex at an early age.
What are your thoughts on the way sex ed is being taught in public schools? Call us now, 549-2937. We have several calls on the line already. Haley is calling from the north side. Haley, you're on the air. What's your comment?
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call. I have a comment and actually two sort of questions. First, let me say that I'm very excited that this is getting proposed. I am studying to be a sex educator along with online, and I'm flying to San Francisco at the Advanced Study of Sex Institute. But this is great, and I think the last Facebook post really shows that sex education is very misunderstood, and I think it's very important that we not only educate about the STDs and, you know, the biology, anatomy, but also get into areas of sex education that are overlooked or aren't talked about as much, like what is appropriate touch, talking about rape, what to look for in the social and emotional health of your friends and of your students and of your kids. So I think that's a very important aspect, and I actually wanted to ask if that's a part of it, of the act. And the other question I wanted to ask, studying to be a sex educator, I'm wondering if there will be incentives or will there be training for people to teach these classes that are going to be available, because that's very important as well, instead of just reading from a book or from a pamphlet or, you know, just basically looking up something that you could find on a Planned Parenthood page. Are there going to be trained educators who know and have resources to help their students?
Haley, thanks for your questions. All right, Representative Fullwood, are there going to be components of this curriculum that deal with positive touch and things like that?
So when we talk about I'm glad the caller called in, because that's one of the things I had not talked about. So when we talk about comprehensive sex ed, that's one of the things that's important. So it's almost, there's some components of it where it's sort of anti-bullying, especially for young ladies to know that you can fight off peer pressure or there is a component of comprehensive sex ed that really doesn't even deal with sex. It deals with almost self-esteem issues and to ensure that folks aren't being bullied or feel the peer pressure. So addressing those components of young adult life as well. And so I'm glad the caller brought that up, because that is a very important component. As a father with a daughter, I know it's going to be important for me to talk to her and continue to build her esteem and let her know that she doesn't have to feel pressured into doing anything. And are there going to be incentives? Here's one of the challenges that we have with drafting legislation is if we go too far, you could lose a lot of people. So we tried to make this, I don't want to say bland, but as amenable as possible for folks who are on the other side. So it's not mandatory. It's at the option of the school district, option of the principals, option of the student and parent. So we tried to make this stay in the middle ground so that we can actually hopefully get it passed. Again, because if we go too far one way or the other, we could lose some folks. So ideally, I would want to do a little bit more. But the reality of the situation is, in order to get it passed, we've had to make some compromises.
All right, going to another caller. Dave is on the line from Nassau County. Dave, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I applaud Representative Fullwood's efforts at trying to bring comprehensive sex education to this part of the country, but I know that he's facing a significant uphill battle, because when one looks at a map of the United States, those areas that have the highest degree of religiosity, or what we typically find in the more quote-unquote conservative areas, are usually the areas that have the highest percentage of pregnant teenagers and STDs. So until there is an effort to look religious influence square in the face and look at the opposition that it presents to education of this nature, that you'll see that this part of the country's got a very, very difficult uphill battle to come to terms with reality until religion is addressed. And I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Well, and I agree. I mean, it is an uphill battle, because you have, and the Florida legislature is predominantly Republicans, and not all Republicans are ultra conservative it's the reality of the situation. So again, that's why we tried to craft the bill so that it wasn't too I guess, too cumbersome on school districts, or too much of a too controversial. So I'm hopeful that we can get it passed. Have some meetings with the DOE, try to get their support. And again, I think it's a move in the right direction. And for me to sit here and say, oh, I feel really good about it getting passed, I would be lying. I think it's an uphill battle, but we're going to work the hardest we can to get it passed.
And again, your Senate sponsor or co-sponsor on this is Dwight Bullard,
yes.
Correct, from Miami.
Yes.
And you are both in the minority party. Again,
certainly.
That creates a challenge for this. Have you gotten a sense from any of your fellow lawmakers on their thoughts about this?
Well, I think all the Democrats support it. no, but I mean, there are some of my Republican colleagues who realize the importance of it and will support it. Will it get a hearing? I hope so. But we'll see. Again, it's an uphill battle. But even if we don't get the bill passed, I think it's important to have the conversation. And sometimes it may take several cycles in order to pass some legislation. So if we don't get it passed this year, I may not be the person that gets it passed 3, 4, 5 years from now. But as long as we start the conversation and somebody else picks up the baton and we can get it passed somewhere down the road, I think that'll be important.
We have a lot of comments, again, on our Facebook page, many in support of your ideas. Bonnie says, need some reality in sex ed classes, not abstinence. Hope the repeal is successful. Amy says, abstinence-based sex education has been proven to not be effective. In a community that has a higher than average rate of STDs, we should and can do much better. And again, you were referring to that Representative Fullwood about Duval County specifically.
Certainly. And in Florida as a whole, we ranked back in 2013, we ranked first nationally in the incidence of new HIV infections. That's number one in the entire country. For me to say there's an epidemic going, I don't know if there's an epidemic, but we certainly have issues in our state and more. Why not better educate our kids, our teenagers, our young adults? I mean, what could it hurt? It certainly can't make the situation worse. So I think a better educated public makes better decisions. So, you know.
All right. And Tom is calling from the West Side. Tom, you're on the air.
Yes, ma'am. I was just, my question is this. Every study I've seen recently has shown that teen sexual activity has been going down. And so I'm wondering why change?
Well, I haven't seen any of those studies, Tom, and I would love to see some of them. And if it is teen sex activity or teen pregnancy is going down, great. I think that it means that we are doing a better job of educating our teens, but I still think we need to do more.
All right. And what if parents don't want their children to learn what's in the proposed curriculum? What can they do?
Oh, certainly. I mean, there's not even an opt-out clause. You can simply, the child doesn't have to go, the parent doesn't. The child doesn't have to participate. Just like the same today.
Mm-hmm.
If a parent doesn't want a child to participate, let's say the Duval County School District says, hey, we're going to do more comprehensive sex education, and they leave it up to the principals at the high schools or middle schools, and the principal says, okay, we're going to do this. It's up to the principal to create the format and the curriculum. The bill basically says, hey, this is what comprehensive means. It means education that deals with these various components. So it's up to the district and the individual principal, I guess the district as a whole, to create the curriculum, and it's up to them to come up with a policy or opt-out clause for students. And again, it's never been the case where it's mandatory to take sex ed. It's always a voluntary class. And the bill basically says that if a district adopts this policy, they essentially have to set aside X amount of time within the year, and it may be a 2-hour time frame within the course of an entire year to do a sex ed class, or maybe 4 hours, or maybe more. I think more comprehensive, it needs to be a little bit longer. But essentially, it's all voluntary, and it's, you know, each parent and each student has a say in the matter.
I noticed there's a process outlined in the bill for parents to put in a complaint with the district if they don't believe that they're following the correct guidelines. Why is that in the bill, and what are you envisioning that doing?
Well, again, just trying to appease folks who may feel like this is a bit much, trying to put in the thought was, if we put in a provision that allows parents who disagree, they may agree, okay, I want my kid to have sex ed, but I don't agree with the curriculum, that there is a method in which they can communicate with the districts and potentially modify what's being taught.
All right. This is Representative Reggie Fullwood of Jacksonville. He wants to overhaul the way sex ed is taught in school, with an emphasis less on abstinence and more education about sexually transmitted diseases, contraception, and some science-based information. Representative Fullwood, you are also sponsoring a couple of other pieces of legislation this session. One of those involves restaurants, specifically in Jacksonville, in specific districts, and their ability to sell liquor. What is that about?
That's really for the Avondale area. There, if anyone ever shopped over there, there's some great restaurants in that Avondale town center. Well, by law, currently you have to have, I think it's 200 seats in order to get have a full bar, essentially. So most of the restaurants in Avondale have full bars. There's a couple of restaurants that are a little bit smaller that are limited because of the space they're in. So they may only have 150 seats instead of having 200 seats. So this would decrease the seat requirement, I think, to 150, which would allow some restaurants, smaller restaurants. And just to give an example, a restaurant like, say, Biscotti's, that most of us are familiar with, mm-hmm. because of the seat limits in Biscotti's, they can't have a full bar. But this would reduce the amount of seats necessary, so restaurants like Biscotti's could now have a, just like every other restaurant in that town center, have the same full bar.
And this is something that the Jacksonville City Council is already behind?
Yeah, it was supported by the City Council, and the Duval delegation supported it as well.
And now it needs legislative change to make this official.
Right, because of the state law mandates that changes like this have to go through the state. So we did a local bill, and I don't see it. It passed its first committee a couple of weeks ago with no problem. So I don't think it'll be an issue at all. The RAP supports it. The Riverside Avondale Preservation Group supports it. Most of the neighbors, all the other restaurants support it. I think everyone realizes that, you know, it's needed.
Yes, and our listeners might remember Ryan Bank did a story where he talked to the owners of the Casbah restaurant, which is also in the Shops of Avondale, mm-hmm. about their desire to add more liquor to their offerings and compete with some of their bigger neighbors. So we'll be keeping our eye on what happens with that bill. Another bill that you are sponsoring relates to farmers markets and people's ability to buy produce there. What is the...
Well, it basically allows folks who receive governmental assistance or EBT to utilize their EBT cards in farmers markets. So the thought there is to encourage more healthy eating amongst folks who receive state benefits. And it's been in certain, the reason there needs to be a law, because it's really not a statute. Certain farmers markets in certain counties around the state do accept the EBT cards, but some don't. So the thought was, let's go ahead and put in law that EBT is usable at farmers markets, and really to encourage folks who are from low-income families to eat healthier, I should say. And really, I think most of us know that when you go to a farmer's market, a lot of times you can stretch your dollar a little bit more. And mm-hmm. so that's really, it's really sort of a healthy initiative tied in with, targeting folks who get the EBT benefits.
Okay. And we've been talking this half hour with State Representative Reggie Fullwood of Jacksonville. Thank you so much for joining our show this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Later in the hour, WJCT music director David Luckin with a celebration of Frank Sinatra on what would have been his 100th birthday. But up next, a Smithsonian exhibit is bringing the untold story of African American aviation to Jacksonville. We'll be right back.
And don't go away. Don't go away. I am talking to you, a new donor, or perhaps a so far no donor. We are asking you to help carry the load this morning here at WJCT during our pledge drive, because most of the money we spend to bring you programs like First Coast Connect and Morning Edition comes from the WJCT listener like you. Now, we don't expect any one or 100 listeners to carry the whole load. In fact, we're glad that the bulk of our budget does come from thousands of listeners just like you. It does make for a more stable organization. And more importantly, it means that thousands of people are telling us that the programming they get from WJCT is what they want to keep listening to. So you can help ensure that WJCT has the money that it needs to pay for programs like this one you're listening to by making your first contribution right now. If you've been listening and you've been intending to make that contribution, we're hoping that you'll go to the phone right now, because many people who become a first-time giver start at about, say, $5 a month. I know you and other perhaps young people like you maybe have a smaller budget, and you're the ones I'm talking to right now. And if $5 a month is something you can do, which I bet it is, that's about a dollar a week, not very heavy load at all. You can become a sustainer that way. And that number to call to set that up is 904-353-9528.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, David.
Hey, remember the first time you paid for your Netflix or your cable or your internet service connection? That's the services we live by and we depend on every day. It's the same as WJCT. So we hope that if you think we're as important to your life as those services, that hopefully you will share some of your funds with us. It's contributing listeners like you that keep this program and all of our other great programs on the air. Actually, listeners provide a quarter of the funding we spend
That's
on programming.
Right.
And it's great programming. It's First Coast Connect. It's Fresh Air. It's Diane Rehm. And guess who's hosting Diane Rehm today?
I know. We know.
Our
it's
own
Melissa,
Melissa Ross is going to be in Washington this morning.
We're very proud.
She will host that. So if you count on all these programs to keep you well-informed, entertained, and enlightened, then take the time now at the end of the year to give us a one-time gift or become a sustainer for as little as $5 or $10 a month. You do that by giving us a call at 353-9528 or go online anytime at all. Take about 45 seconds of your time and we will get your vital information. And we are happy to say we don't share your information or sell your address to anyone. It's just for us. Yep. 353-9528. If you love what we do here, make the phone call right now.
Yeah, and as you look back on the year, you might think of some memorable moments that WJCT has brought you, like how they keep you connected to the content and the services that add meaning and value to your life, keeps you connected to news and music and all that is happening in our local world and our larger world. So WJCT does keep you connected. We are pushing that idea as we talk about staying connected to WJCT through a contribution that you can make. Also, we do have some thank you gifts of support. So as I was talking earlier about a $5 a month sustainer level, you'll get earbuds with
a built-in mic.
A built-in mic. That's
so you can do some hands-free
A lot of people could
telephone.
Use that. Yeah, so that's a simple level, and you can do it, and we hope to hear from you right away to set that up. The number to call is
353-9528.
Didn't have
Whoa,
it,
we got a blank
didn't
there for
have
a second.
It in front of me.
Okay. It should be ingrained in your brain. 353-9528. Every dollar counts. It doesn't matter how much, whether you're at the $5 or $10 level or maybe $100 a month level. 353-9528. We appreciate your call. Make that call right now.
Thanks.
Welcome back to First Coast Connect. I'm Jessica Palumbo, in for Melissa Ross. An exhibit called Black Wings, American Dreams of Flight is at Jacksonville's Ritz Theater and Museum through the end of January. Here to tell us all about it are Adonica Toller, administrator with the Ritz Theater and Museum. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Kathy Searcy is also here. She is the daughter and niece of Tuskegee Airmen.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this exhibit, Black Wings, chronicles African Americans who, despite facing discrimination, helped pave the way in the world of flight, right? And lots of different kinds of flight are mentioned in the exhibit. Adonica, tell us about what makes this exhibit different.
This exhibit is different because it celebrates the role of African Americans in aerospace. It's also special because it is from the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C., which people recognize as a premier institution in our country. And this is a partnership with them. And what's special about this to Jacksonville is much of Jacksonville history is a part of this exhibit. Bessie Coleman, who was the first woman to have an aviation license in the Black community, and women, she predates Amelia Earhart in her innovation and the things that she did to promote women in flight. The Tuskegee Airmen, we have Jacksonville natives who were part of that first group of men, and Miss Searcy will talk about her father and uncle in a moment. And also in the space program, we have a Jacksonville native, Lieutenant Colonel Alton Yates, who was a pioneer in the space program, and he grew up in the La Villa Park neighborhood, and where the neighborhood that the Ritz Theater Museum is located. So he actually grew up a few blocks from our location. And because Jacksonville is a naval town, a military town, and the first African-American Navy pilot received his gold wings at Naval Air Station, and the Blue Angels were founded at Cecil Field. So this exhibit not just celebrates the role nationally, but Jacksonville is greatly represented in this exhibit, and we're excited that we were able to bring it to Jacksonville.
Oh, that's so cool. When I first read about it, I didn't realize there were so many Jacksonville connections exhibit. Kathy Searcy, you mentioned your uncle. There's a piece of your uncle in this exhibit.
Yes, my my aunt donated his jacket, his actual jacket that he wore during the when he was there, and Donica has it on display, and so that's nice to have a piece of our personal history represented.
Yes, tell us about your father.
Well, my father, William Stockton Searcy, Jacksonville native, he was at Tuskegee, and he was recruited. He's part of what they call the DOTAs, which is Documented Original Tuskegee Airmen.
Okay.
So they came through, and the different students, they recruited them to become Tuskegee Airmen. And my uncle, Wayman Searcy, was studying at FAMU, and so he was recruited in Tallahassee.
Mm-hmm.
And they both went on to, my father was the Master Sergeant Mechanic, and my uncle was the Lieutenant Bomber Pilot.
Okay.
So together, along with many other Jacksonville natives, got a chance to train and go overseas and be with the Tuskegee Airmen. And they all had a string of not really talking about it a lot. Mm. And so it was in our later years that we're really hearing the stories, learning the history. So it's been really, I'm so glad with the Smithsonian and with the Ritz that rich history is now being told and documented even further.
Looking at the exhibit, Black Wings, the Smithsonian exhibit, did you learn something about your father or your uncle that you didn't know?
I guess the biggest thing I didn't realize, I knew a lot of what they went through, but through the exhibit and you read, there's so many stories. I wouldn't say they were untold, but they're things that we don't know. And I'm so glad that it's at the museum because now students can go through and they can learn and share the stories, because we have a very good friend that has a book coming out shortly, and I love the title. I believe the title, I hope I don't say it wrong, if we don't tell it, it won't be told, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, Rodney, if I have it incorrect, but basically it's so true. And so I'm learning so much more about what my dad and my uncle went through, their experiences and the places they went. Because when you hear your parents talk about places they've been, you know, you're a kid. You don't really pay attention the way you should. And so now it's coming to life, because when I see the pictures of Italy or this and that, I think about pictures that we've seen or stories that he told, and it's a connection.
Right.
Yes.
Now, Adonica, this exhibit has been at the museum for a few months now.
Correct.
What have you noticed when the public comes through and sees it? What are they most surprised by or interested in the exhibit?
They're surprised at the history, just how I would think one of the points is how women were a big part of aviation early on. We hear about the Wright brothers and Lindbergh, but when they realized that women and African-American women were very involved in flight in the early 1920s and 30s, and that's basically due to Bessie Coleman. She was that icon that really brought it all together. What one surprising thing that I discovered in the exhibit that there was this quote from 1879 by a student at Fisk University who said, "Man will be in the air like birds." And this is an 1879 quote from an African American at Fisk University. And I said, wow. So even before the Wright brothers, African Americans were thinking about, I want to fly. And 1879 is that Reconstruction period where it's a pretty volatile time in American history, yet there were people still dreaming outside of where they were. Mm. And when the Wright brothers accomplished that feat in 1903, there were African American pilots who fought in World War I. Unfortunately, they fought for France. They could not fly for the United States. Mm. And so Captain Buford is one of those, and he's represented in the exhibit. And Bessie Coleman, the sexism and racism here in the United States, no flight school would train her, and she was determined to fly. So she learned French, she saved up the money, and she moved to France and achieved her license in French. I think that's amazing. And when she returned, it was just that it was like, yes, let's do this. And when she returned, she opened her own flight school to teach women how to fly.
Wow.
And she was a stunt woman, which people don't even realize. So there's a great picture of her hanging upside down out of her plane in the exhibit.
Bessie Coleman, one of the parts of Blackwing's American Dreams of Flight. It is going on now at Jacksonville's Ritz Theater and Museum. It's there through the end of January. Thank you so much to Adonica Toller with the Ritz Theater and Kathy Searcy sharing her family's story. Thank you, ladies, for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for the invitation.
The exhibit right now at the Ritz Theater. And in a moment, Old Blue Eyes would have been 100 this weekend, and WJCT is celebrating his birthday. That's up next.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
When she was little, she used to accuse me of wearing her clothes.
Did you?
Of course I did.
On the next Fresh Air, Jeffrey Tambor. He won an Emmy for his portrayal of a transgender woman on the Amazon series Transparent. The complete season 2 will be up on Friday. Tambor also co-starred in Arrested Development and The Larry Sanders Show. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Columbia Broadcasting System sends you Songs by Sinatra. A quarter hour with Frank Sinatra and the music of Axel Stordahl, his orchestra, and the Bobby Tucker Singers.
It had to be you. It had to be you.
Welcome back to First Coast Connect. I'm Jessica Palumbo, in for Melissa Ross. Saturday would be the 100th birthday of Frank Sinatra, and we're marking the occasion with special programming here on 89.9 on Sunday. Music director David Luckin joins us now. David?
Was that you announcing at the beginning? That's an incredible announcing voice. We're going to do Frank Sinatra. It'll be his 100th birthday on Saturday, and we didn't have Saturday free. So Sunday night from 9 to 12 on Relax Radio and on 89.9. Really rare radio recordings live on the radio, songs that he never committed to vinyl and duets with people like Nat King Cole.
Wow.
That have never been heard before. About half of everything you're going to hear has never been heard.
And that's 3 hours, right? Math is not good, but
from
3
9 to 12.
Hours, 9 to 12.
And we're actually cheating in a little more. On our classic radio show at 7, we're going to do a command performance, a wartime show with Frank. And again, at midnight, we'll do another old-time radio show with Frank. So 5 hours of Sinatra, but the one to be there for is the 9 to 12.
Okay, and I'm looking at this beautiful box set of Frank Sinatra. It's A Voice on Air, 1935 to 1955. What is this, David?
That's where I got all the material for the special. I kind of cherry-picked what I thought was the best. You're going to hear Eisenhower on D-Day, Frank Sinatra reacting to D-Day, original commercials.
Wow.
So a little bit of comedy, a little Dean Martin introducing Frank way back then when we didn't even know they were friends. And like I said, some great duets and just songs that Frank didn't record except live on the radio, because there's shows like Your Hit Parade where he would sing the top songs but never committed them to vinyl himself.
Okay.
So lots of treats, lots of surprises.
So not just your grandma's Frank.
You won't hear Strangers in the Night. This is really, Frank in the 40s. And actually, we have his very first recording with the Hoboken Four from 1935 on Ted Mack's Amateur Hour.
I don't even know what that means.
Well, it was like, The Voice and what's the Fox show, Carrie? American Idol.
Yeah.
So way back when, Ted Mack had a show called The Amateur Hour, and you could try and get on. And Frank is there in 35 with the Hoboken Four.
Amateur Frank.
Yeah, exactly. Right to the great Frank that we all know and love.
Again, that is Sunday from 9 to 12. It'll be simulcast here on 89.9 FM, also on WJCT's Relax Radio HD station. That's at 89.91 on your...
No, HD3.
HD3. That's right, 89.93 on your HD dial. Also, in addition to the three-hour special Frank Sinatra rare recording special, we have at 7 and at midnight another Frank Sinatra.
Yeah. It's Sinatra's world. We just live in it, Jessica.
That's right. Thank you, David.
My pleasure.
And finally, this hour, there's lots to do around the First Coast this weekend. Here, as she is every Thursday, to take us all around town, we welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the maestro of merriment, the Spectator.com's Carrie Speckman.
Yay!
Is here.
It sounds so funny hearing that from a voice that's not Melissa.
Yeah.
It works. It's nice. I mean, it's nice. Also, I wanted to just say someone corrected me on Facebook that it should be maestra.
Maestra.
Yeah, just
maestra,
so you know.
Maestra Carrie
instead
is
of
here.
Maestro.
Carrie.
I like maestro better, though. I'm sticking with it.
All right, maestro, what's happening at Heming Park Friday tonight?
Collective tomorrow.
You're right.
It's Thursday.
You're right.
You're not good with math, and you're not good with dates.
All right. What's
but
happening
I love you
tomorrow?
Anyway. Okay, tomorrow is Collective Con. It's a big fan event that is celebrating the release of the new Star Wars film, which I don't know if you've heard anything about. I don't know. But they're going to have a light sword battle at dusk. They're having special guest performances by the Jedi Academy of North Florida. I know. It will be very entertaining. It is free, but if you buy advance tickets, which I think gets you some special privileges, you also get a lightsaber.
Nice. Yeah. A real lightsaber?
Yes, a real lightsaber.
Okay.
A real one.
Very nice.
Whatever they are. Okay. Also, Friday at the arena, which is tomorrow,
That's right.
the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, which They will be following the journey of a young runaway who on Christmas Eve breaks into an abandoned vaudeville theater seeking shelter from the cold and the ghostly visions she experiences from the concert hall's past.
All right, this is The Ghosts of Christmas Eve.
Yes. And they are one of Arena Rock's biggest acts. They have more than 11 million fans, and they are ranked in the top 10 for attendance and grosses, according to Pollstar.
Wow. That's
I know.
At the arena tomorrow night.
Correct. Then tomorrow and Saturday, there's Community Nutcracker. Which
more
is
Christmas?
Yes, which is the one. I know there's like a bunch of different Nutcrackers, but this is the one that is a mostly local cast,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the other ones that are professional ballerinas and whatnot. So this one has got lots of kids.
Wow, more than 200 Northeast
yes.
Florida kids.
Yes. So that is Friday and Saturday. And they also, I think they have a matinee show on Saturday. So
okay.
Friday and Saturday also is the historic Springfield Holiday Home Tour. So you can go peek in people's houses without getting arrested. Well, assuming you go in the houses that are on the tour. Let's
right.
just keep it that
Stick
way.
Stick to the tour.
And they will be serving cookies in Wassail. Is that how you pronounce it?
Mm-hmm.
I think it is. Thank
Here
you.
Here we go. We're wassailing.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. The tour starts at the Springfield Improvement Association on 7th Street in Springfield. Saturday is a big deal. It's a bittersweet day at RAM because it's one of the biggest events of the year. It's Holidazzle. However, it's the last day of regular season RAM. Mm-hmm. It's open till 9. It's usually open till 4, so you can shop later. They're going to have Santa there. They're going to have all kinds of classic movies like The Grinch Stole Christmas and Charlie Brown Christmas, and they'll have gift wrapping stations. They will also have beer, which that only happens like 3 times a year that RAM sells beer.
And it says holiday cocktails, too.
Well, it's a spiked eggnog,
okay,
to be specific.
Spiked eggnog, roving yes. carolers.
Yes, and some guy who's dressed up like Gabriel, I guess the angel.
Trumpet.
Yes, the trumpet guy. And he like is all painted and he just stands there like a statue. So be warned that I don't think he comes out of character, but you might not know he's a real person. But he's there. And of course, live entertainment all day long, 10 to 9.
Yeah, 10 to 9, Saturday at RAM.
Hemming Park. Also the site of the running of the Bulls 5K, which I don't know if you've heard of. It's very interesting. It's sponsored by the ARC Jacksonville. It's a fundraiser. And, you know, it's kind of a takeoff on the running of the Bulls. But instead of Bulls, there will be Jacksonville Roller Girls. Actually, I did it last year. I was a Matador. I'll be doing it this year, too. But they are sporadically placed along the route, so you don't know where they are. And they kind of block the street, and you have to try and run around them. So they'll tag you with, like, a paint. Dauber.
Right.
It's quite entertaining the lengths people will go to get away from the roller girls.
So go see Carrie Saturday in
Hemming
yes. Park.
I will be taunting the Bulls to get them all riled up.
All right. And that is our program today. Thank you to all of our guests and all of our callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show's theme song is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Next up, our own Melissa Ross guest hosts the Diane Rehm Show.
Yay!
Donald Trump's call to ban Muslims from entering the U.S. has touched off a rift within the Republican Party. What the split between the base and party leaders means for the future of the GOP and the 2016 presidential race. That is up next. I am Jessica Palumbo. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be back tomorrow at 9 with the Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
And thanks for joining us. We're listening to First Coast Connect. I'm Michelle Corum here with Ryan Bank.
How's it going?
It's going great. It's a wonderful day on the First Coast. And we have some people to thank who live in the area who have already made a pledge of support this morning. Angela in St. Augustine, as well as Ken, also from St. Augustine, called in. Merrill from Jacksonville, Kathy, Craig, all from Jacksonville. They called in, and here's someone who likes the Diane Rehm Show, especially Kathy. Kathy likes the Diane Rehm Show that I mentioned from Jacksonville. So we all like the Diane Rehm Show, especially interested to listen today as Melissa Ross hosting the show once again for today. We also say thanks to Ruth from Ponte Vedra, who called in. So you are listening to WJCT. This is a very short pledge drive we're having at the end of the year to sort of nudge you to please go to the phone and think of us at the end of the year and make a pledge of support, because we could sure use the funds from listeners, which is largely one of our foundations of support. The number to call right now is 353-9528. Again, that's 353-9528. Those last four digits, WJCT. Call that number and make a pledge of support in any amount before the year is up. Right, Ryan?
Right. And, you know, the thing is, too, is that if you are averse to using a phone, if you don't want to use a phone, if you don't want to call in, you could always go on to WJCT.org. Or if you have the WJCT app, not only does it allow you to listen anywhere, anytime, but it allows you to donate anywhere, anytime. And if you're still wondering, if you're still thinking about why you should give a tax-deductible end-of-year gift to WJCT, think about why you first started listening to WJCT. Mm-hmm. To be more knowledgeable at work, yes, and in conversations with friends and family members. Knowledge is valuable, and it is worth paying for. Mm-hmm. So again, that number is 904-353-9528. Or, of course, head over to WJCT.org.
And, you know, we don't send you a bill. Instead, we rely on what's kind of like an honor system. And we're asking you to think about how much, like Ryan mentioned, how much you listen, how much you, how much you spend time in the car, spend time at home, spend time doing your projects around the house or your errands out and about town. How much do you have 89.9 on where you are listening to the radio or watching WJCT public television at your home? Think about that and think about why you choose WJCT over other stations. So give that some thought. Make a voluntary contribution that is necessary, I tell you, to keep us fiscally strong and also to maintain our editorial independence.
Right, right.
Explain and, that. Right.
Well, because we are a public radio station, and as you most likely know, because you are listening right now, we are able to bring you all of the most up-to-date local, community, statewide, or national news with a unbiased varnish, mm-hmm, a civil discussion, like the discussion we're probably going to be hearing right now on the Diane Rehm Show with our own Melissa Ross,
right,
who's hosting for the second day, and mm-hmm, she'll host also on Friday.
Yeah.
But if you like that kind of programming, if it means something to you, then please give us a call at 904-353-9528. As they say, 'tis the season.
Yeah. And $10 a month even, that kind of contribution could be one of the smallest expenses on your credit card, but it does have a great impact for this station and for the community at large. You are helping keep afloat and healthy this public radio station. So call right now. It's 353-9528.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.